You're joining All Things College and Career for in-depth stories and advice with your hosts, Meg Gary and Bobby Ryan, owners of Academic and Career Advising Services.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Today, we are interviewing Sarah Baker Andrus. She is the founder and CEO of Avara Career and Career Coaching Business. She's worked on all sides of the hiring equation as a recruiter, a hiring manager, and as a career counselor, serving in the corporate world, nonprofits, and in academia.
Yeah, so it was really interesting to get Sarah's take from someone that's worked in so many different places as it relates to the work world on both sides of the hiring equation. So that's a really cool perspective, and I think you guys will get a lot out of that. When you ask Sarah, and she has this on her LinkedIn page, what gets her out of bed in the morning, she says it's helping others find, build, and contribute to thriving workplaces. So that's really at the core of what she's trying to do. So, hey, tune in and check out what Sarah has to say.
Yes. So with no further ado, let's get on to our conversation with Sarah.
Okay, let's do it.
Hello, Sarah Baker Andrus. Welcome to All Things College and Career. Thanks so much for doing our podcast today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Meg and Bobby. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Well, we are really glad to have you back. And I say back because I'm going to tell our audience right now that we tried to record with Sarah once and I lost the recording. So Sarah's been gracious enough to come back and do it with us again. So welcome back, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here. And where are we talking to you from today?
I'm in Wilmington, Delaware, in my home office. Like most of us, still not back, you know, in fully engaged in the real world.
Right. And so many people will never go back.
That's right.
That is something that people are having a hard time adjusting to. I have a good friend that is going back, but not really. They're hoteling and they...
Yeah, which is such an interesting strategy. Like they're basically sharing desks, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't have your own space, but you go to the office as a hotel. Basically, you check in and share a desk and share a computer. And yeah, just a...
I think that's an interesting concept, and it's related to the open office concept of work. Mm-hmm. In my last corporate role before I left corporate life, I worked in an open office, and it was, you know, massive square footage of desks and computers, and you were assigned a desk, but you were told that you should only have three personal items on your desk. Why?
So you can move them easily. Yeah.
That's exactly right. I personally was less comfortable in that environment, but I think it had more to do with the open floor plan than it did with the fact I was sharing a desk periodically and moving around.
I don't like that open floor plan either. Yeah. I mean, you don't mind being near coworkers, but you need a little space. But her biggest thing is that the people that she enjoyed working with so much may or may not be there on a day she goes in. And if they are there, they could be somewhere else in the building, anywhere, and nowhere near where she sits. So it's disheartening for some people. Some people love it. Some people are like, yes.
Yeah. I think for a lot of us, this idea of going back to work, whatever back to work means, has a silver lining of, for the first time for many of us, being able to negotiate what it is that we would prefer. And when I am talking to clients right now, the way this is impacting the job search is that they really need to establish their ability to work independently. They need to talk about how they have collaborated with people remotely over the last year, perhaps. They have to establish their credentials as a virtual worker, which is something that we've never had to worry about before. But the silver lining in there is that it gives each of us, I think, some opportunity to consider what type of situation is really going to be a good fit for us, and then to negotiate that as part of the job search process. And that for many people is life-changing.
Yeah, I agree. And I have to say, like, it becomes kind of a bargaining thing, like you were saying. I'm willing to take this job, but this is how I want to work, this hybrid situation. Or especially in companies that are saying, all right, everybody has to come back now, but your performance was stellar, or your whole department's performance was stellar when they were working remotely. So now it's like you have some leverage to say, well, wait a minute, do we really need to come back?
That's right. Exactly.
And I think employers that are offering this work from anywhere, it used to be work from home, now it's work from anywhere, you know, that's a great benefit to a lot of potential employees. That's something, you know, along with a benefit package, a 401k that employers can entice employees to their organization. This is becoming a big leverage for them as well.
You know, it's going to be interesting how it changes the ways that we work. Mm-hmm. I think that offering this work from anywhere solution is a competitive advantage that employers are using to attract high quality talent. Yeah. And at the same time, yesterday evening, I was at a professional event, one of the first live events I've been back to.
Yeah, you know, so weird, right?
Yes, it is strange. But I was speaking to a relatively new CEO who had just been promoted. And mm-hmm. she was talking about how they now had remote employees. And she had already been thinking about the culture of the organization and the impact she wanted to bring, you know, with her own brand onto the culture as the new CEO. Yeah. And we were discussing about how do we bring remote workers into a culture? How do we help them feel integrated and a part of the culture so that the aspects of the culture touch them in positive ways, even when they are not physically in an office? And I think that that's something that we're all going to be grappling with over the next several years as we become accustomed to, you know, just different ways of working.
Right. I mean, I know that when I was first starting out in the workforce, a lot of my social interaction and things like that came from my coworkers. We would do things after work. We'd go for a run at lunch and these things. And, you know, when I look at my son, who's works in tech and he's able to work from anywhere, which is wonderful. But I think, gosh, he's missing out on that connecting with coworkers in the same way. I mean, they do connect, obviously Zoom and things like that, but they're all over the country. So mm-hmm. I know it's going to be something we have to grapple with. And, you know, he seems fine with it. So maybe I'm projecting too, because yeah, this is, you know, how you do that. You're like, well, this is how I do it.
So, right. They have to foster those relationships maybe outside of work more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's tricky.
But anyway, Sarah, so you have worked on all sides of the hiring equation. Can you tell us about that? So what's it like from a recruiter's perspective? What's it like from a hiring manager's perspective? And what's it like from the perspective of a career coach?
Sure. I would be happy to do that. I think my background is a little bit eclectic because, like most people, I fell into, you know, what I do for a living. I think many of us sort of stumble into a career. And mine started in career counseling in a very traditional university setting where I was helping people, you know, students, they happened to be adult students where I was working, helping them re-enter the workforce. And then that just turned into this real fascination with how we choose careers, how careers sometimes choose us, and how we can be more intentional. And when I moved into the corporate space, it was in a recruiting role. So I had that chance to consider not just from that, you know, previous student perspective of, you know, let's find a job that you're qualified for and help you interview for that job. But from a recruiter's perspective, what do we want our team to look like? What are the components and skills and personal characteristics that are going to make a great team? Speaking to culture, who's going to bring something new to our culture? Who's going to help us keep this a dynamic environment? And of course, those questions will change depending on the organization that you're with in terms of what you're looking for in a cultural fit, but that's important to the hiring process. So I came to understand that there's a mix of people that make a great work environment, and that you need to be very intentional from the way you post a job posting. Yeah. How is that written? Who is that going to attract? Who is that going to turn away?
Yeah.
So I became, you know, really curious about that process, talked to a lot of peers, other recruiters at other companies, and really fell in love with this idea of finding a fit. And that's the language we use in our business at Avara, is really helping people find meaning and some sort of enduring satisfaction at work. Because we work a lot of hours and we spend a lot of time, often more time than we do with our families.
Yeah.
So fit is critical. And as a hiring manager, you know, the perspective I gained there was invaluable in my current work, because I think for most people who have a team reporting to them, when somebody announces that they're leaving, they found another job, or there's some opening that's created by a new project, the thought of having to go through reams of resumes and go back and forth with HR, that's daunting. And so when somebody would get a promotion on my team and I knew I had a slot to fill, my first instinct, and I think most of our first instincts, was to go to my team and say, who do we know?
Right.
And that really taught me a lot, because I saw from my own actions and the actions of other hiring managers that networking is critical. I saw it and understood it. I would regularly have people who would reach out to me, you know, saying, hey, could I chat with you about your company? Could I chat with you about, you know, at the time I was doing recruitment marketing, could I chat with you about that? And in one role, I was doing more of a public relations type of work. Those conversations from total strangers or somebody who had been introduced to me, I welcomed those conversations because
I thought you were just going to say, I got so many of those that I couldn't.
Yeah.
Because that's what, you know, you tell your clients to do. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Not at all, Bobby. I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think we have a preconceived notion that people don't want to hear from us.
Right. Yeah.
And the opposite is true. I took every one of those calls. I kept a bank, you know, a file in my computer of people that I had spoken to. I made notes on what I thought about them. And when I had an opening, there were times when I would go back to somebody I had spoken to previously, you know, it could even be a year back. If that person had stayed in touch with me, had kept me posted on their progress,
fostered the relationship. Yeah.
We were building a connection. Yes. And those are the people that I went to first. And then I'd call in my team and say, who do we know? And it's really, on the one hand, some people would rightly, I think, in many regards, perceive that as an unfair advantage. However, it is not, because anybody can make those calls. You do not need to know me to reach out to me. And I think most of us feel that way, especially in these days of social media. It's not who you know, it's really who you choose to meet.
I love that. That's such a great thing.
That is good, because that's the old saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. But I love that change on it. It's not what you know, it's who you choose to meet.
That's
true. I mean, the opportunity is there. And I do think maybe not everyone is as gracious as you is taking on, you know, those intimate informational interviews and stuff. But hey, if you reach out to 10 people and three say yes, that's three people that you
just
make connections
with. That's a huge win. That's a huge win. And the other thing I share with my clients when we talk about networking is that the more thoughtful you are about who you want to reach out to and why that specific person and what specifically you want to get out of that conversation.
Right. Go in with an agenda. Yeah.
And the more likely you are to get a yes. And then the truth is, we rarely get rejected. We rarely get no's. The person just never responds. And I always say to my clients, how does that hurt you? You know, I know you're afraid of rejection, but if you never get a response, is there really any danger in that? Like, how have you been harmed? No, you've lost nothing in that effort.
Exactly.
Just wanted to comment on a couple of things that you were talking about. I think hiring managers, something for job seekers to think about, are just as nervous as the job seeker is in terms of making a mistake, not bringing somebody in that will fit in, that's a good match, that will be productive. So they come into the situation with a lot of trepidation as well. And that's, I think, oftentimes why they start the process within and referring from somebody they know versus going to the job boards right out of the gate. But also just wanted to touch on what you mentioned about how you post a job. And this is a good tip for employers. I know we had interviewed Christine Cruz-Bergara recently from Handshake, and she mentioned that they did this incredible study. And absolutely, if you include the word woman in the job ad, you're going to get more women applying and that sort of thing. But it really, it makes women feel more welcome or more mm-hmm. wanted in that mm-hmm. role. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I always advise people to read that blurb that we usually skip up at the top, the one that describes the company, here's who we're about, or here's the mission of the organization. It's tempting to skip that and go right to the responsibilities. But there is so much richness in that yeah. paragraph or two that gives you a sense of how the company has chosen to present itself. What yeah. they have chosen to talk about in describing the work that they do. And we can build a lot of stories in our head around what's true or not true in the job search. And I think yeah. the job boards are just ripe with opportunities for misunderstanding mm-hmm. and it's challenging.
But you are right. I mean, that is the temptation just to skip down and say, okay, what is this job and what mm-hmm. are my responsibilities and, you know, what are they looking for? Like, what talents do I have to have?
I think that leads to a question that I think we need to change. When we scroll right down to the responsibilities or the qualifications, we are approaching a job search from a, oh gosh, will they hire me? Am I qualified? Will they like me? It's a very passive and reactive approach to a job search. And instead of the question, will they hire me? I think we should ask the question, do I want to work here? And if we approach the job search with the question, do I want to work here? We're going to read that first paragraph because That's we're right. going to want to find out about who this company is. I mean, when I think about it, we have a kind of a portfolio of knowledge, skills, and abilities, right? And if you think of it like an investment portfolio, you've got stocks, you've got bonds, you've got annuities or real estate, whatever you've got. You want to invest that financial portfolio where it's got the greatest opportunity for growth and the most reduced chance of risk.
Yeah.
I like to think of the same thing for our career portfolio of our skills, our personal traits, our ways of working, the way we approach collaboration and teamwork and our work values. This is our portfolio of what we offer an employer, and we want to invest that where it has the greatest opportunity for growth and minimize the chance of risk. So we have to ask, do I want to work here? Or we're almost being irresponsible and setting ourselves up for a greater risk.
Yeah, that's for sure. So when you're in the job search, what do you think the biggest barriers are for people when they're looking to land that job?
Yeah, I think the biggest barrier is stalling. Yeah. And I'll tell you why I say stalling and what I mean by that. There is a predictable cycle that many people get trapped in. Mm-hmm. And the cycle begins with a trigger. I need a new job, or I want to find a job, or I'm a senior getting ready to graduate. And I've got a lot of energy and excitement about what I'm going to do next. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pour that energy and excitement into job boards because that is, it feels like we're taking action, but it's very performative. It's not really it's not a plan. So we have the trigger, we get this energy, and then we invest our action into something that's actually passive in terms of we relinquish then control. So the best way I can explain this is probably one of my clients, Lizzie. Lizzie went to a top school, outstanding student, great grades, all the good internships, good leadership. Lizzie, she thought she had lots of opportunities. And she told me she applied to like somewhere close to 300 jobs. Well, wow. That is a ridiculous waste of Lizzie's time and energy.
Yes. Yes.
And she got nothing from it. But when people would suggest to her, you ought to be networking, she froze and she stalled. So we get the trigger, we take the energy, we put the energy into the thing that feels most comfortable, where there's least resistance, which is the job board. And then we don't get any feedback. So she was beginning to question her, you know, am I really as good as I thought I was? And maybe I'm just not very good at job hunting and I don't know how to compete here. And then when somebody might say, oh, well, you should reach out to people you know or ask for referrals, she froze because she didn't know how to have those conversations. She froze because she was already then questioning her capacity. She really stalled.
Was it also because like she felt like she didn't want to put people out and have to?
Yes.
Yeah.
She didn't want to put people out. She felt her resume should speak for itself. She didn't want to bother people. Now, once we started talking about how to navigate those conversations, how to initiate those conversations, what to say, how to follow up, she had a job within 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's an awesome success story. And that is so true. And I think that's very true, especially with younger people coming out of college. As we get older, we feel more comfortable reaching out to people. I think most of us do. No, you disagree? A lot of people still have
I think we feel more comfortable, but I think people still don't recognize that as the most productive use of time in the job search.
Right.
Yeah,
they don't. Yeah. And I'll also add that many of us are introverts.
Yeah,
and many of us are very comfortable one-on-one with people we know, but the thought of reaching out to somebody that, you know, my neighbor introduced me to or would be happy to introduce me to, I will immediately get caught up in fear. And that's another place where we stall.
Mm-hmm.
So that fear or the stories that I'm telling myself, like, oh, they're probably really busy, or I'm not even sure my skills are good enough to make a move because I've been at my job for too long. We come up with reasons not to put ourselves into uncomfortable situations. Mm-hmm. And networking is a very, very uncomfortable situation for most of us of any age, because we are essentially inviting judgment.
Yeah. So you feel like it's not so much of an age thing. It's a more of a how confident you are in dealing with people that you don't know.
Right. And that confidence can be built by having a plan. That confidence can be built by knowing who to reach out to, what to say when you reach out to them, and then recognizing, hey, I'm in charge of this conversation. I get to ask the questions. How fun is that? I get to ask them important questions like, you know, what skills do you think are the most valuable in your position? Or what skills does your company hire for? Or what is the future of this particular role in this industry? We can ask the questions we want to ask in an interview, but really would not be appropriate for an interview situation.
Yeah. And I like how you say have a plan, because what I think is probably the same people that have a hard time reaching out to people are also the same people that work really well with a plan. Mm-hmm. Somehow those personalities to me seem to go together. I mean, the people that are comfortable reaching out to anybody, you know, they fly by to the seat of their pants more type of people, probably. And I know I'm generalizing here, but I do think that if you are nervous about reaching out and that's kind of your personality, a plan or something that you know very specifically what you're going to do will make you a lot more comfortable. And I like that. That's true.
And even extroverts can use a plan, because what I find happens with extroverts or people who could just have a conversation with anybody, they're less intentional and they don't make the most of their time. And they come away saying, gosh, what a great conversation. And then I might say, and what's the next step there? Who are they going to introduce you to?
Yeah.
What did you learn? And you know, dead silence.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Everybody needs a plan. It's just extroverts sometimes they don't think they need
that is so true.
Yeah.
Say you have a client that's been successful in landing an interview. How would you coach your client to approach an interview? How do you get hired? How can you separate yourself from the competition and get that job?
I love this question, Meg. To my mind, it really begins with knowing ourselves and becoming absolutely fluent in who we are and what we offer a prospective employer. And I think the best way to do that is to have a focus on high point moments of our career or even our life, if you're returning to the workforce, high point achievements when we felt really good doing something and it was a meaningful achievement and there was a clear outcome. We can look at those stories and pull out the skills. Oh, look at your leadership there. You know, you really had attention to detail in that story. And so one of the things I do is take people through their stories, help them identify and articulate their skills so that when it comes to getting interview questions that we didn't expect, which happens all the time, we have these stories in our back pocket and we can name the skills specifically and call them out. Like, for example, you know, I might say, tell a story and then say, you know, when I reflect back on that, I feel great about it. And I feel that I really was able to demonstrate my capacity to think outside the box and maintain a timeline, solving the problem with the project, and still getting everything done that in a way that exceeded everybody's expectations. And that, you know, I was told that was, you know, and you can put things in other people's words too. You don't have to brag about it. You can say, I was told that was, I made magic there and how I turned the client around.
Yeah. I like that approach. That works well. I have to say that what you were saying earlier about knowing yourself, I mean, we all kind of know who we are, but how often do you practice explaining it to others? And that's what you have to get really good at doing.
Indeed.
For job interviews and for all those tricky questions they ask you about.
Well, and a nuance about practice is practice is not reading your notes. Practice is actually practicing out loud.
Right.
Actually, I like to tell my clients to record themselves until it stops hurting.
Yeah. That's really good advice. Get in front of a mirror too, because you want to see how you're presenting yourself and how your posture is. And
or you can pick up your phone and record yourself into your phone.
Oh yeah, recording. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is a good argument to maintain sort of keep a file, you know, maybe a portfolio, an electronic portfolio, where you sort of keep track of all your best accomplishments and your best achievements. Because I think when you go ahead to begin the job seeking process, you forget all of those accomplishments you've had on the job or achievements.
Or those little comments when a boss
or those great comments. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So in my email, I have a folder that is called Kudos. And anytime anybody sends me a nice email, I just pop it into my kudos file. And those stories that you're talking about, Meg, having that folder of accomplishments or an email, you know, that says, hey, thanks. Yeah. Those are also great when we are in the inevitable low point of a job search. And I think what most people don't recognize is in this cycle of the exciting trigger and then taking action and then the fear set in, and our mindset matters. And so one of the ways we can continue through that fear, through those doubts, and get control of our mindset is to review those past accomplishments, is to look at those emails. We need strategies that will keep the momentum going. And we need to expect in advance that there will be times when we doubt ourselves and we need to have a way of getting through that. And accomplishments are one way to, you know, reviewing those stories is one way to do that.
Yeah.
Mindset is so critical in the whole job seeking process. Yeah,
it is.
So Madeline Mann has this thing where, you know, the elevator pitch. And I love how her advice is to make it more of a conversation, to start with a question and then end with a question, you know, mm-hmm. or, and like, Kelly, have you ever heard of this? And then at the end, you know, follow it up with a question.
Is that how you would handle it?
How would you handle that situation or whatever it is?
Yeah.
I think there's all kinds of things you can practice to prepare for these things. And the elevator pitch, of course, is just like you're at a conference, you're in a meeting, you're wherever. And, you know, you get that, or even if you're talking to a neighbor, it's about getting across what it is that you really want to do. It's networking, but it's networking in like not in your face type of way. And then those people might say, hey, you know, she was telling me about this thing and maybe I'll give her a call. You never know where those things are going to lead, but it's where always nice. Yeah. Yeah.
It's basically preparing to answer the question. So tell me about yourself.
Tell me about yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And this question is such a gift. If you know how to answer it, if you've prepared. Yeah. The tell me about yourself. I love Madeline Mann. She's just incredible. And the question is one way to open. Another way to open, if you're not, because not all of us have the confidence to open with a question. That takes a lot of gumption. I like the idea of beginning with a statement about who we are. So for example, if I were to answer the tell me about yourself question, I would probably begin with something like, I've spent my entire career immersed in everybody else's careers.
Right. It's almost like a catchy title or something that's going to draw you into a story, you know?
Right. And when like, I talk
tell me more.
You know, I talk to people who are in business analytics, just throw out a random example. All right. And I might say, well, what makes you good at business analytics? And they'll give me a little bit of insight about that. And a great beginning for somebody like that could be, you know, for as long as I can remember, I've been really good with numbers. And I've always been told that math is my thing. And I listen to that and it gives me energy and I love it. I think whenever we can speak from the perspective of what we love, from the perspective of what we enjoy, when we bring that to an answer, like to tell me about yourself or an elevator pitch, it immediately brings energy to our voice and we can add that little bit of passion. Mm-hmm. That, you know, so I've always been good with numbers and there was no question when I, you know, when I decided what I was going to do, it was going to be having to do something to do with math. And I studied this and what really fascinated me was that.
Right. You
know, rather than sort of walking someone through your resume, which just is going to not be engaging.
Yes, I agree. Don't walk through the resume, you know, do something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
They have your resume. Mm-hmm. So you did a TEDx talk that was for a great career, be a rebel.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So I think that most of us are eager to do what everybody else is doing. Eager, especially young people, you know, fit in, the peer pressure.
Your parents.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what we find is that people who tend to really excel in their careers are the people who step outside the norm and mm-hmm. who rebel. So for example, if your parents wanted you to be an accountant and sent you to school to be an accountant, and you are passionate about playing the flute,
right?
You know, maybe being a professional musician isn't in your future, but maybe there is something that would make you a unique job candidate because you play the flute. Go and do the different thing. Don't mm-hmm. do the thing that everybody else is doing. Study abroad has become one of these things that I have a little bit of a pet peeve about, because study abroad used to mean that you distinguished yourself by having a really meaningful cultural experience in another country. And now it has become such the norm and the protective influence of the university, the extension of the university has made it basically a transference of the university system to just a different geographic location. You have to really look for those programs that are truly going to immerse you in culture and right. not just mean you're going to classes in a building that happens to be sitting in Rome. And I don't want to minimize study abroad, but I'm saying as an example, if you want to be a rebel, find something that's going to challenge you and mm-hmm. not keep you in the comforts that you're accustomed to.
Maybe right. live with a family abroad, immerse Precisely. Yourself in a new language and not Precisely. Just, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things in your head that keep you from doing that. Security, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. what will happen if I make this step? So I guess depends, it kind of, you know, depending on the level of responsibilities you have in your life, there's certain parts of your life where you can encourage people to be a rebel because it's not like they have children that they have to take care of or, you know, a mortgage payment or something. I think, honestly, at the beginning of your life and then maybe in your later years when your kids are grown, you have real opportunities to be that rebel. And
you do. And yeah. and I like the idea. Another thing that's a little rebellious is going for the job that isn't typical, going for the employer that isn't a household name, because right. a lot of yeah. these smaller employers will give you opportunities and responsibility that nobody would trust you with at a Fortune 500 company.
Right.
And so
right.
then in your next role, you get to say, well, I had a chance to actually do meaningful work, not just be part of a cohort that was all doing the same thing. My employer relied on me to execute on these specific things, and I had the chance to deliver these outcomes. Having stuff to talk about is really important, and it builds confidence and it builds mastery, which yes. is critical to, you know, to advancing our careers if that is what we want to do.
For sure. Like anytime I've worked in a small company or a startup, I went in for a specific job, but ended up doing like 10 different jobs.
Absolutely.
And right, immediately, and because someone needs to do it, we need someone to do it. And if you're willing to step up and jump in, all of a sudden you have all these things to add to your resume. So yeah, it's very true. You get to do a lot of outside of the box things.
Yeah, and you make a better candidate that way. I mean, when I'm interviewing, I am looking for somebody who has a variety of things they can bring to the table mm-hmm. And has taken on things that are uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, that's so true.
Yeah, it's important for job seekers not to get caught up in the label of a company name or mm-hmm. a shiny new building, but really to hone in on what you'll be doing all day for tasks at that yeah. position. But
yeah. Let's talk about switching jobs. And so the people that are not just switching from company to company, but stepping into a new career and how they can make themselves look like a valid candidate, even though that's not their background.
Yeah. So thank you for that question, Bobby. I really think that this is one of the most challenging things right now in our economy, because entire industries have been wiped out by the pandemic, right. or they're coming back, but they're coming back slowly. I also think the pandemic has made all of us rethink our careers and what we want out of them and make a pivot to something new. So if you take the example, I'm working with a client right now who is a school teacher, and she was a school teacher for 15 years. She taught high school math. And, you know, with her, it was a matter of identifying, okay, what does a teacher do? What are the critical skills? Well, you have project planning. That's massive. She taught high school math, so we can identify that she has quantitative and analytical skills. She is by nature a problem solver. She is a coach. She does time management looking a year out. So that would add things like organization, administration. She has to interact with parents, communication skills. She has to report to administration. So we have record keeping. So mm-hmm. you do an, if you can do an inventory of what you have learned. If you were a server and you're in a restaurant, my goodness, you've got unparalleled customer service skills. You've got conflict resolution skills. You have to be organized and you have to know how to work with money and you have to be a team player and you've got to be collaborative. So then we look at what those are and how those might look in a particular industry. I think working with a coach here can be extremely helpful, and there are some assessments as well that can help you figure out, okay, of the four or five things that I'm thinking about, mm-hmm. how well would these skills that I have translate? So the client that I mentioned, the high school teacher, she's actually beginning a quality assurance role, I think, in 2 weeks.
Good for her.
Yeah, yeah, it is awesome. And she was able to negotiate an like a totally unexpected pay rate because teachers in our area, at least, are paid reasonably well in quality assurance role. You know, they might have normally started her, you know, somewhere in the teens, but she was able to negotiate a lot more because she knew how to talk about her skills. And yeah, most of the candidates applying for that job don't have her background and experience. Like, they know she's going to be able to hit the ground running. They know she's going to have the maturity. And she was willing to start in an entry-level role. She's fine with that because she's changing careers.
Yeah.
But everybody knows she will work her way up quickly, including the employer. They're like, hey, we'll get you in here. You'll learn the system. And then we've got a manager in 6 months to a year.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. You make a great point that I think career coaches are a great investment, yes, especially for people that need that language to help them transfer from one industry to another. And
right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the future of work, because I mean, we've talked about how the workplace is changing and things like that. But I mean, Meg has the stat on this, like 10 years from now, there's going to be jobs that don't even exist.
Well,
that
you
know about today.
If you think about it, you know, there are jobs today that didn't exist 5 years ago.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. And back in 2008, when we had the economic downturn, a lot of companies were created. I think that's when Uber and Groupon and many that we use every day today. And, you know, there's a lot projection that the same thing may be true as a result of COVID, that we may see a surge in creativity. Suffice it to say that jobs are continually changing. All the work I do today could not have been, was not being done 10 years ago even. So a lot has changed that way. Yeah.
Right. So the question is, what can we be telling our clients? What can we be telling people that they should be doing today to prepare for that inevitable change in work?
Right.
It's not
if it will change, it's when it will, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The first word that comes to my mind when I think about this is adaptability. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That we should pursue opportunities to demonstrate our adaptability and our resilience. And to what Bobby was saying earlier about working in a smaller organization where you see something that has to be done and you do it, mm-hmm. those are the moments in which we can really demonstrate our capacity to handle change. So change is inevitable. We get mm-hmm. that now,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
If we didn't get it before, we certainly get it now. Mm-hmm. And so how do we demonstrate that we are somebody who is not thrown off by change, that we are somebody who is motivated by an opportunity to step up to an unfamiliar situation? How do we, again, focus on our skill set as opposed to our job title? And I think job titles are becoming less and less relevant. And I like to think of it as, you know, we're a big camping family. So if you are building a campfire, right?
Yeah.
And you've got folks around and you're like, okay, you go over there for some, you know, see if you can find some big logs. All right. Well, let's mm-hmm. consider those logs. Those are the foundation of our fire. Those are the fundamental skills that we have. But that's not enough. We need to go over there and collect some smaller, you know, sticks, and we need to collect some twigs and some kindling and some leaves and the things that are going to really light this fire. And none of those alone are going to build a big fire. We need all of them. And if we look at each component that we find in a different place, we go over here to this role to get those skills. So a job is never a waste of our time if we are learning something in it. And there's a warning here too that I think people are not thinking about enough. And that is, am I still learning in this role? Am I still growing and building those skills? Or do I need to ask for additional responsibility? And if it's not here, then do I need to go somewhere else in the forest to go pick up some more sticks and kindling to continue to grow and learn, because things are changing so quickly in the workplace right now that the ability to be a learner, the ability to be open to new experiences is something that companies are going to increasingly screen for.
Yeah, I love what you just said about if you kind of feel like your job is stagnant, that you're not growing and learning anything new, then you need to do something about that.
That's a red flag. Yeah,
that's a red flag. And
it is.
And either you can stay in the same company and just say, look, I need more responsibilities, or or even better, go to your manager with an idea and say,
yes,
I notice this is lacking. Let me take that on. I can do it.
Yes.
And if I'm a manager and someone comes in with that, I'm like, great.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And the other comment I want to make about that is demonstrating adaptability. I think a lot of employers are going to be saying, so what was your reaction during COVID, and how did you, how did you capitalize on that? And,
exactly.
And you know, what did you do with your time? And
that's
how were you adaptable?
Yeah,
I would love to comment on that with perhaps a little different perspective. My concern about this question as we reintegrate is that some people were traumatized by COVID.
Of course.
Some people had lost during COVID. Some people had responsibilities that didn't allow them to bake bread or learn how to knit or play the guitar. And I think we need to have compassion and patience. And if we are one of those people, I think we have to articulate that to an employer who asked that question and really thoughtfully consider, how do I want to explain that I wasn't the person who, you know, learned another language? I was the person who was binging on Netflix because I was dealing with trauma. And I think in my business, Bobby, I have a number of clients who are embarrassed and ashamed. And I keep saying to them, no.
I agree with you. But that it goes along with the same thing. I mean, it's still the same question. But if your answer is that, and it's because, and you can explain why it's that,
correct.
I don't think an employer is going to look down on that.
I don't think so either.
I think that they'll be compassionate and understanding, or most of them, or any company you'd want to work for.
There you go. That's the key. Any manager that you would want to work for is going to say, oh, what was that like? That must have been rough on you. And what were your takeaways? And I think no matter what our experience, if we can kind of work through that embarrassment or shame, which is not necessary, and we can talk about our takeaways. So, you know, if you had a loss, well, my takeaway was that this was a very significant person in my life. This is what I learned from them. And this is what I'm applying to my life now.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's the bottom line is how can you, how do you explain it? And, and what did you learn from it? Good or bad?
Right.
Yeah. All right. I think we could move on to the, now we're calling them the quick questions. So I reached out to my son, actually. I said, you know, we do rapid fire, but it's not the right name because it's never rapid, you know? And he says, how about quick questions? And I said, yeah, some quick questions.
Yeah.
So are you ready for that?
I'm ready for the quick questions,
I think. So for a movie genre, do you prefer rom-com, horror, or drama?
Oh, definitely rom-com.
Oh, okay. Me too. Okay. So do you have a favorite?
Anything with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that like the standard right there?
It is.
Yeah. I'll have what she's having. Everybody knows that one. Okay. Story of your first kiss.
Oh, it was Spin the Bottle in the Closet.
Mine wasn't,
That's
but
so
that was
classic.
Probably my second
it's
one.
Classic.
Yeah.
I probably dated myself right there.
I was just going to say, does anybody still play spin the bottle? Yeah. Or is that just our generation?
Is that our generational thing? Yeah,
maybe. I know. I mean, that was pretty, you know, it was pretty risky there back in the day. Mine was at, I can remember, mine was at, I was at a, like a baseball game or something, watching it with this other boy, and he just reached over and kissed me. And I was like,
hello.
I was so young. I didn't know what's going on. Okay.
Yeah, anyway. You were like, what, in second grade or something?
Something.
Wow.
She got a little bloomer. Very early.
I probably just froze like this. Anyway, okay. What talent do you wish you had?
I really wish I could sing, but nobody wants me to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meg and I have the same desire.
Yeah, right.
And right.
We don't let it hold us back. But
no, absolutely not. My family can't stand it, but I sing. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's great. I mean, you know, if you enjoy it, go for it.
Yep.
Okay. Can you drive a stick?
Yes, I can. It was the first car I ever learned to drive because my father insisted upon it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Good. And now, did you, when you took your driver's test, how did the hill stop go? Because that was our big trauma with the stand, is like, gotta do the hill stuff.
The hill.
Did you make it?
I must have. I have zero recollection.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. I was a little, I practiced that so many times, but nailed it, thankfully. I don't know. We weren't allowed to get our license till we were 18.
Oh, wow.
Or was it 17, Meg?
17.
Felt like 18.
Yeah. I think I got mine within a week of turning 17. I had like pre-signed up.
And in Maine, it was 15.
Yeah.
The driver's license was 15. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, my mother couldn't wait. She actually signed me up for private driving lessons because I was going to be in the next semester at school. And she was ready for me to take over grocery shopping and carpool.
Right. Right. Yeah. Did you have younger siblings?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So someone's getting a license.
Exactly.
In this place.
Yeah. And I was the oldest. So
yeah. So there you go. And Sarah, you're going. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you were probably happy to get your license. When you first get your license, you don't mind running errands and running your
thrilled.
Siblings around because you just love driving.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
Would you bungee jump?
No. I have a fear of heights.
Do you?
Yes. So I would not. I think I might enjoy doing zip lining one day.
Yeah.
But
that seems
no
safer
jumping.
Somehow, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Probably no different, but
it's that free fall. It's like
No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually not scared of heights because I'm like up on roofs and I do all kinds of stuff. But I'm not a big fan of the bungee jump.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think I'd do it either. Okay. Do you drink coffee?
I do drink coffee.
Okay. So how do you drink it?
I drink it black.
Black. Okay.
Yes.
Well, my mom
and I love I love really good, rich, dark roast coffee. That is my preference.
Yep. Okay. That was my next question. What is your dark roast coffee? That sounds good. Do you use a press or do you percolate it?
We grind it.
Yep.
And we do, if I feel like it, I'll do, you know, the little espresso, the silver espresso thing if I have time in the morning.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, we use the regular drip coffee maker with freshly ground coffee because it has a timer on it, which means we can wake up to coffee. And I'm a fan of that.
Yeah. You're a definite coffee drinker. Okay. Are you a good dancer?
I'm not a good dancer. If you had said after singing, what would be another talent I wish I had, it would have been dancing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what makes you, if you're a good dancer. I enjoy dancing.
Sure.
But am I a good dancer or who the hell knows?
I like to say I dance for the amusement of others.
Yeah. So you're at least, as long as you're not in Elaine from Seinfeld.
Right.
Love Halloween.
I know. It's a whole trend. Okay. Yeah. What is your dream vacation?
Ooh, you know, I think it has changed a little bit. Because my interest in travel has waned somewhat.
Has it? Okay.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah. But I would love someday to visit Asia. I just would love to. And not any specific country per se, just such a contrast to Western civilization, where I've had the good fortune of traveling quite a bit. I would love to see that part of the world. And I'm particularly intrigued by the geographic formations in parts of China. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we ironically were scheduled to leave for a trip to China last year, March 17th, 2020.
Yeah. St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah, Bobby and I had a trip scheduled to hike the Haute Route in the Alps.
It goes from Chamonix, France to Zermatt.
Chamonix,
France. Yeah. And we were so excited about that, but hopefully we can get to it. We can't do it this summer either because Europe is. Maybe next summer. Mm-hmm. that would be nice. Okay. Chore you hate doing.
I really dislike just generally cleaning, the deep cleaning.
Yeah.
That is not my thing.
Yeah, I know. The surface cleaning, but getting into the I know. You know what I hate doing is cleaning the showers.
Exactly.
I just hate cleaning the showers. Like, I would hire someone just to come in and clean the showers.
I do hire someone just to come in.
Just to come in for specific things, not the whole house.
No, she does the whole house. But it was a very late in life that I decided to get a housekeeper.
Yeah.
And
you're like, I'm not doing this anymore. What am I doing?
Like, why didn't I do this when the kids were little? Like, in retrospect, that would have been such a great idea. But I don't have her in a lot. I have her in every other week. And I don't have to scrub the shower. And that is worth it. Yeah.
Yep. It's totally worth it. Okay. Yeah. Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Well, I am a morning person. That should be obvious to you guys. We're talking at 10 in the morning.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a morning person, but I have to say it's funny. Lately, I have been getting up. I don't know what's going on. So whatever.
That is very strange for you.
I mean, I've been 8, you know, I'm not, let's not get crazy. I'm not getting up at 6.
Five or,
No, none of that going on. So anyway, well, thank you, Sarah. Those were the quick questions and you nailed them, of course. And they're just fun to do because we get to talk about things that are outside of the topic of the podcast and we get to know you a little bit. And it's really a pleasure. So
it is a pleasure to talk to you guys as well.
And Sarah, how can our listeners reach you if they'd like to work with you?
Sure. I would suggest the best place to start is on my website at www.avaracareers, that's A-V-A-R-A-H, avaracareers.com. And if they want to subscribe to my 10 days to jumpstart your job search, which is walking you through a lot of the things we talked about today, from tell me about yourself to networking effectively and interviewing skills, that's free. avaracareers.com/subscribe.
Yeah, and we will definitely include those links in the show notes. So if you're driving or cooking, no need to worry about writing it down.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for that. And thank you for this amazing conversation. You guys are awesome. And it's really been a pleasure.
Well, it's been a pleasure for us too. You're so easy to talk to. I feel like we could just chat all afternoon and especially on this topic where we're all so interested in it. But let's get out there and help people get those jobs, right?
Absolutely.
All right. See your day.
Yeah. And thank you so much, Sarah. Have a great day. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on and sharing your amazing knowledge with our listeners. I think a lot of people that are in the job seeking process are going to find this interview really helpful to them.
Yeah, absolutely. People like Meg, people like Sarah out there really helping people get those jobs that they love or can grow in and thrive in. I mean, that's the goal. So definitely reach out And also, thanks everyone for listening. If this is your first time listening, welcome to the podcast. If you're a return listener, we really appreciate you listening and tuning in. It really helps us a lot. If you really want to support us, we would really appreciate you subscribing or rating or reviewing the podcast, or have all three, whatever strikes your fancy. But it really helps us and helps support the podcast.
Yeah, so thank you to all that do that. And again, thank you to everybody that tunes in and listens. Have a great 4th of July, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Yeah, have a great 4th.
Thank you again, Sarah.
And this has been an Academic and Career Advising Services production.